Is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 18th day of September 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. We'll take a look at the cash grain market with Matt Bennett from the Windsor, Illinois TGM elevator. Matt, of course, is with Channel Seeds. And then we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Should be plenty of breaks in the weather for corn harvest to get underway in earnest across the Midwest, though there will be a little rainfall from time to time. Actually, it's a really good forecast from Mike, so you can stay with us and hear it all right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers in Chicago as they finished up on this Thursday afternoon. Corn pit, 338 and a quarter, down 3.5 cents. The March at 350 and three quarters, 3.25 lower. And May corn at 359 and a quarter, down 3.25. July, 3.5 cents lower, $3.66 and one quarter cent. And December of next year at 384 and a quarter, down 4 cents for the day. From the soybeans, nearby contract, November that is, 971 and a half, down 11 cents. January at 979 and a half. 11 and a quarter lower. The March at 987, 11 and three quarters lower. May futures down 12 cents at 994 and a quarter. July $10.5, down 12. And next year's November at $9.85 and a quarter, down 11 and a half cents. For the soybeans, the bean meal at 328.80, down 7.60. Bean oil for the day at 32.72, 67 cents lower. Live cattle futures in the October at $155.57 and a half cents on the afternoon, $1.45 lower for the day. December there at 158.70, down $1.30. Feeder cattle, September, 229.95 in the lead, down 35. October, 227.82 and a half, 27 and a half cents lower. And lean hogs on the afternoon at $103.62 and a half cents in the October, down $1.47 and a half cents. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media and comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. The crude oil for the day is now trading at $93.11, $1.31 lower. Heating oil or diesel fuel at 271 and 3 tenths, 3 1/10 of a cent lower. And gasoline on the wholesale price, 6 tenths of a cent lower at $2.56 and 2 tenths of a cent. Natural gas at $3.91 and 8 tenths, 9.5 cents lower on the day. And the ethanol futures in the October contract at $1.66 and 2 tenths. That's 4 7/10 of a cent lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,246 is up 94 points. Gold at $1,226, down about $8.50. And the U.S. dollar is trading the index at 84.43. That's down 0.056 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Sunny skies, a high of 71 degrees on an east-northeast wind in about 10 miles an hour. Mostly clear this evening, a low 48. Tomorrow, sunny and 75. South-southeast winds by tomorrow afternoon, 6 to 10 miles an hour. Mostly clear on Friday evening, a low 58 with a south wind at 8 miles an hour. And Saturday, sunny skies and 82 degrees. Again, a southwest wind at 9 to 16. That one will gust all the way to 24 on Saturday. And then Saturday evening, showers and thunderstorms likely, mainly before 1 a.m., mostly cloudy and a low of 64 degrees. The chance of rainfall in the area on Saturday night set at 60%, and then we'll turn to sunny skies on Sunday with a high of 77 degrees and Sunday night clear and a low of 53. On Monday, to start the work week, sunny and 70, Tuesday sunny and 69, and Wednesday sunny skies and 70 degrees. A more complete look at the weather forecast for the growing areas in the United States at the bottom of this half hour.
Support for agricultural information on WILL comes from Busey. With over 145 years of agribusiness experience, Busey's team is committed to providing resources to today's producers. Busey, your dream, our promise.
It is a Thursday afternoon. It's the 18th day of September, a Thursday. And on the phone line is Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, the combines are moving, well, but not a lot in the area today. More today probably than there were certainly yesterday. I made a trip into southern Illinois and didn't see anything, frankly, from here, Champaign, all the way down to Harrisburg that was moving. And we ran through a rainstorm in Effingham that just poured for just a bit. So there's some time left, I suppose, before we really get the corn coming out of the field. And I'm wondering what your thought process at this time is on the glut of corn that might be around, how many acres there could be, what the grain stocks numbers might look like at the end of this month, and of course, ultimately, the changes that would come up in October.
Well, those are all good questions, and I guess you can kind of guess at them, but my guess is the slowness of harvest is going to, I think harvest is going to drag out a little bit. Normally, we have a strong tendency to maybe make harvest lows during the first 10 days of October. Beans might be able to get that job done. Corn doesn't look like that will happen, at least right now. A lot of times when you get into real big crop years, and then if you get into a late harvest, things maybe just drag out. But somewhere in here, we're probably going to try to turn the market sideways, but I don't think it can turn sideways until the trade has a little better handle on what USDA is going to do to the acreage situation on the October report. And then, of course, the yield reports that we're hearing are just phenomenal. So the trade is still believing there's room to ratchet up both corn and soybean yields on the October report. And, of course, the big controversy is the discrepancy between USDA's estimated acreages that they did on the June report versus what's been reported to the Farm Service Agency, and how that will come about, whether or not we'll see big changes in October or big changes in November. Some of the private surveys that I looked at back in June that had a pretty good track record would indicate that maybe the FSA acres that are being reported are more in line what than probably what USDA is using. But we'll have to see how that comes out. But if USDA does have to come in and cut corn acres a couple million, that at least allows a cushion for a 2 bushel or 3 bushel increase in corn and not really impact ending stocks very much. If they would cut a million of soybeans, then, you know, that gives soybeans a little room to go up too. So, but I don't see anything happening or anybody really talking about a bottom until we see what October crop report is.
Are you thinking the bottom is sideways from here, or is it really further down?
I think we got some downward price vulnerability. I've been looking at that July 4th chart gap put on the weekly December corn chart as a measuring gap for December corn futures, and that points to, 308 or so. I do recognize that the 320s are historically a good support area, but we're on the verge here of busting underneath this little double bottom here at 335.5 on D's corn. We'll see, what the weather forecasts look like next week. But my guess is as more and more combines begin to roll, we're going to see more and more hedge pressure come into the market, and we're going to bust underneath that. The 40-week cycle really doesn't, it's got another 4 or 5 weeks of sideways to lower action in it, so it kind of would correspond with maybe working lower into toward the October crop report on corn. Beans, again, we're down against the most recent low within a couple pennies of it. My guess, since the 980s have kind of given way, the next target on November soybeans is probably a move into the 940s, and then we'll take it from there.
On the acreage from the FSA earlier in the week that was released, can you put much weight into the short number of acres FSA has got on their books at this point? Of course, they're actual planted and collected acreage figures.
Well, I don't put a lot of faith on anything coming out of Washington anymore. I do know that there's different opinions on that, and you know, the Informa group out of Memphis, which is a big gun consulting firm, has been kind of the leader in touting the relationships of, you know, the July report and the August report and the September report, how that correlates to what actual acres are. Are, you know, they're going to come out tomorrow with another look at it, but based upon what they saw during the August report, they were the ones that had been kind of touting about a two million acre drop in corn and, you know, a million something acre drop in soybeans. We'll see whether or not they've changed their minds on that tomorrow afternoon or not.
Well, you don't have a real thought process here on whether those acres there are there or not?
My guess is they're not there, or USDA's running acres too high. And I think if the truth is known, they were running too high acres last year on the crop report, because I don't think we produced the corn that USDA has on the books. We'll get a glance at what happened here at the stocks report here at the end of the month, what we end up with. But I do know a lot of those bushels of last year, of this current year, was moved backwards because we were at pipeline inventories. But there's still a big unexplained disappearance number in that, and I think what it is the production number that USDA used is too large, and I think it was too large because they were using too many acres. And soybeans, I think, is going to be real interesting this time, because we've been basically running on vacuum. What USDA will give us for an ending stocks number, and how much, because they should be pretty, you know, they should have a pretty good idea, because not a lot of harvest had taken place by September 1. So we should have some pretty good, solid ending stocks numbers here on this report coming up in a couple weeks or 10 days.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I do appreciate it.
Very well, Todd.
And, of course, Dan Zwicker, he's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, and joins us on this Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for today's broadcast comes in part from the Friends of WILL and from Common Ground Food Co-op in downtown Urbana, with a deli featuring iced lattes made with fairly traded ingredients and local milk, and a salad bar filled with local and organic ingredients. More information is at commonground.coop.
Up next, backyard industry. This week, residential alleys are usually ignored spaces, rarely considered to be extensions of where we live. But in this episode of Backyard Industry, Lisa Braltz revisits her neighborhood alleys and muses on their shortcomings and potentials.
Back in the summer of 2007, which seems forever ago, I was fond of early morning walks through the alleys in East Urbana, Illinois, which is also where I've lived with my family for a decade. The alleys in my neighborhood are un- or underpaved, mostly forgotten leftovers from the last century. Some are still used as throughways for cars, but others are choked with weeds and come to abrupt dead ends. In 2007, these alleys were awesome for a rather nosy person like me. There was this array of brief avenues letting me see what was behind the houses in the small apartment buildings. But I could also check out, up close, the truly hidden spaces, those bits of earth between alleys and garages that were planted with flowers like hollyhocks and daylilies, with occasional fruit trees providing shade and a natural archway. And sometimes, even back then, I'd see a chicken coop. I recently returned to the alleys for the first time in 7 years, mostly out of curiosity. I started off a few blocks from my house and ran into a gentleman mowing the part of the alley that was directly behind his house, a cute little bungalow with a well-kept backyard.
My name is Stephen Fran, and I live here in the east part of Urbana.
I asked him why he was mowing the alley.
At one time, the city was wanting us to buy this, but I would still have to keep it open so somebody could drive up and down here so they could fix the lines, the power lines. I figured, well, I don't want to buy it.
So now you mow it.
Well, I've always mowed it.
You've always mowed it?
Oh, yeah.
But maybe your neighbors don't necessarily keep up the alley the same way?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just looks better for my property. That's about the reason I mow it.
Unfortunately, he didn't seem excited about some of the changes his part of the neighborhood had seen. We disagreed on urban chickens, for example. If you want to live in the country, he told me, move to the country. After we shook hands and said our goodbyes, he started mowing again and I started my alley walk, a bit deflated. The conversation seemed to affect what I saw. I was shocked to see that many of the gardens that had existed 7 years ago were gone. Several fruit trees had been cut down. There were no grapevines lining back chain link fences. Few flowers had been planted on purpose, though there were still perennials like daylilies and prairie sunflowers along some fences. There were no chicken coops. In fact, a dead animal lay in the middle of one alley buzzing with flies. There were many more tall privacy fences and way more mean-sounding dogs. That's not to say there weren't some good finds.
Okay, so here we go. We've got alley raspberries. And these are probably raspberries that started on the other side of the fence in the actual backyard of the residents, but they have spread. The canes have spread and are now in the alley area. And they are ripe and beautiful.
Squash and tomatoes had found their way outside fences, and there was still plenty of beauty and food to discover. But basically, the change that had taken place over the 7 years since my last visit was noticeable and unsettling. As I walked home, I thought about the reduced number of gardens I've noticed in town over the last few years. I thought about the Great Recession, which came along a year after I stopped walking the alleys. And I also considered the introduction of smartphones in 2007 and how that has changed, quite literally, everything, including our concept of leisure time and how we spend it. Finally, I thought about people proudly renting or buying their first homes in East Urbana, like we did in 2005, and wondered how they feel about their neighborhood. How do they see it? Are they there to reclaim their yards, their alleys? They're big questions to ponder about such small spaces as we start to put our gardens to bed ahead of another winter. But I do wonder, what will spring 2015 hold for East Urbana's alleys? For Backyard Industry, this is Lisa Braltz.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
USDA releases the cash rents report each August. Gary Snitke evaluates the number for the University of Illinois. He says the figures for this year, and these reflect cash rents paid for this year, 2014, do not show anything really new.
We see the same trends across the state that we typically see. Highest cash rents are in central Illinois. This year, the top spot happens to be Logan County with the $308 average cash rent, and we see some lower rents in northern Illinois. DeKalb County would have $278 cash rent, and then southern Illinois has lower rents as well. Southern Illinois, we get some rents in the $80 to $90 range.
In general, says Gary Schnitke, the higher the productivity of the land, the higher the cash rent. Interestingly, though, cash rents in Illinois this year are about 4 to 5% higher than they were last year. This seems counterintuitive to the expectation, because most would have thought the negotiations taking place last fall would be for lower rents. Schnitke has an explanation.
If you look at what the Professional Farm Managers, Illinois Society of Professional Farm Managers, they released their rental survey, and from 2013 to 2014, cash rents did decline. What I think was going on there, though, was that the high cash rents in the county came down a bit, but the low end kept coming up.
The highs were not as high, and the lows were not as low. It appears the lower-end rents moved more than the higher-end rents. Consequently, there was a higher average. It is something Schnitke expects to see again next year.
Yeah, moving into 2015, again, I would not expect the averages to go down all that much because, you know, there's those low cash rents that may be coming up over time. I would expect the top end to come down and maybe even $30, $40 an acre on some of those cash rents above average. That's what the Illinois Society of Farm Managers said they expected on their professionally managed land, that, you know, the rents would be down $30 on average from 2014 to 2015. And that might bring down some of the average rents as well.
But maybe not all of them across the state. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's check in on the cash grain market. I think in maybe the combine this afternoon, Matt Bennett is available. He is a consultant, of course, with Channel Seeds. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Are you in the combine or the truck, or where are you out on the farm today?
Yeah, we're in the combine right now, trying to get started cutting beans for borderline. A lot of the beans are getting pretty close right now to early group trees. So,
and what are they testing?
It looks to me like our sample is about 14. So,
and I know you were in corn earlier in the week. What was it testing, and how was the corn?
It was around 23 to 26, and it was awfully good. We were pretty happy with it. You know, I think. Probably right around maybe what we thought it might make. So we're pretty happy with it.
Now you're in Windsor. Are there many other combines running in the area at this time?
Yeah, there were several guys delivering corn to the elevator yesterday to the various elevators around here. And there's a few guys starting to get to cut a few early beans, but for the most part, guys are picking corn, trying to haul in for early drying deals, but most of those are kind of going to the wayside here this week.
And once those are gone, there won't be as much of a temptation to get out into the field. Will you stay out of the field for a while, and will corn harvest begin to drag out, even though we've not started yet?
Well, I think a lot of guys will probably quit picking corn whenever they can't get a drying deal, unless they've got capabilities on their own farm, but you know, I would say we're hoping we're going to be able to cut beans here for the next 2 or 3 days to take advantage of some of this early premium.
Yeah, so you'll be taking advantage of the early premium. Are you still of a mind that on the corn you want to deliver to the elevator earlier rather than later for fear of space not being available?
Well, especially here these last few days, you know, with guys being able to get a little bit of the deal on drying, it makes excellent sense. And then just simply from a logistics standpoint, I think that, you know, a month from now, it's probably going to be a little tougher to get more done during the day than maybe what it is right now, just simply because if you've got 5 or 6 guys going and they're in really good corn, it's going to be pretty tough to, you know, to expect to get a lot delivered.
Thank you for taking the time. Be safe on the combine this afternoon.
Thanks, Todd.
Matt Bennett, of course, is with Channel Seeds and a farmer. He is in the Windsor, Illinois area, joins us on this Thursday afternoon to take a look at the marketplace and give us an update of what's happening in the field.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
It's National Play-Doh Day. The modeling clay substitute was developed by Noah and Joseph McVicker in 1956. Originally, the compound was available only in one color, off-white, and came in a 1.5-pound cardboard can. Among the ingredients, wheat flour, water, and salt. On this day in agricultural history in 1843, Charles Valentine Raleigh was born. A British-born American entomologist, he pioneered the scientific study of insects for their economic impact in agriculture. In 1851, the first edition of the New York Times was published. In 1951, John Clark was born, an English molecular biologist. He was a founder of applying molecular technology to farm animals. His work resulted in a sheep giving milk with human proteins. And his work set the stage for the eventual cloning of a sheep in 1996, the result of transplanting the DNA of an adult sheep to an unfertilized egg cell. And in 1990, a 500-pound, 6-foot-high Hershey chocolate kiss was put on display at Times Square in New York City. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. This is Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Mike Tenora joins us to take up the weather forecast. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. It's been a beautiful several sets of days here, although we have some rainfall that comes into the Midwest and the Corn Belt and then periodically leaves. Farmers would like to get into the field sooner rather than later. Maturity is just about there. Will the combines, do you think, be able to run by the time we get over the next several days?
It looks like there'll be some great weather for harvesting through tomorrow. The real question regards how much rain there will be on Saturday and into Sunday. At this point, we are looking for scattered 1/3 to 2/3 inch amounts across a large portion of the Corn Belt. But the key word there is scattered. We're now looking for widespread coverage of heavy rain this weekend. We just think it will knock a few people out of their fields for a day or two, but that will be about it. So overall, through the weekend, just a little bit of a slowing in corn and soybean harvesting. As we move into next week, though, it does turn a lot cooler for at least a couple of days, but it also turns a lot drier. We don't even see that much rain through the weekend, so if you add on a dry week next week, then all of a sudden you have a pretty good harvest outlook, even with temperatures being a little bit cool for the first half of next week. And the key there as well is that it only stays cool for the first portion of next week. Later next week, it looks like another fairly substantial warm-up will begin, similar to the one that's taking place now. And just because of that, we don't really have too many concerns for corn and soybean harvesting over the next 7 to 10 days. Probably the one thing to monitor would be what happens next weekend. So we're talking a full 7 to 10 days into the future. And in that case there, we do have another storm system that approaches as part of the warm-up that occurs later next week. That will be the next time to really watch out for a significant rain event. But the chance for that right now is low, and that's simply because the event is too far into the future, and there's too many things that can happen that we don't know about to really have a high confidence forecast for that period.
They're trying to sow wheat in the hard red winter wheat belt in the southern plains. Will they be delayed at all?
We think they will. If you look at U.S. winter wheat planting rates at the moment, 12% of the U.S. crop was planted as of Sunday. That's right around the 29-year average of 11%. So we're pretty much right on target with what we normally would see for this week in September. The one concern we have, though, regards what's happening in Oklahoma and Texas. We have an upper-level system that is currently off to the southwest, producing areas of flooding in parts of Arizona and New Mexico. And that is unusual for them to see flooding, even though this is technically their monsoon season. While the system that's producing that rain drifts to the east over the next several days and produces heavy rainfall across a big chunk of the southern plains. So we're looking for widespread 1 to 3 inch rains across the wheat areas of Oklahoma and Texas, which is very unusual. This is not an area that is accustomed to 1 to 3 inches of rain at any time of the year. So when you put that in their area in the end of September, all that means is that planting won't take place at a rapid clip. But keep in mind, rain makes grain, so you throw some water on the ground, you might delay planting for a little bit, but once you do get that crop planted, you'll be looking A-OK as you move into October.
Hey, Mike, thanks for taking the time with us today. We do appreciate it. Mike Tenura, of course, is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. One other weather note, and it's related to the climate. The autumnal equinox is Monday evening at 9:29 Central Time, and fall will arrive. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.